My goodness.
Nobody enters in bankruptcy.
No, interesting. The next doll case is...
Our next case for argument is in the matter of the Rockford Productions Corporation.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please move down the hallway. If you're not here for the next case, move down the hallway.
Mr. Lester, I find it hard to believe that these people aren't interested in bankruptcy law, but...
I have no idea why we lost a crowd, Your Honor. They must have some knowledge of my oratory skills to have decided it was enough.
It's time for us to proceed.
Okay. Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, good morning. My name is Tom Lester, and I represent the appellant in this case, Harrison Kishwaukee, LLC. The relevant facts in this case are not in dispute, nor are they very complicated. In December of 2006, Harrison Kishwaukee entered into a lease sales back transaction with Rockford Products Corporation, which was a company operating in Rockford, Illinois, for a large industrial building on the corner of Harrison and Kishwaukee. Subsequent to that, in July of 2007, approximately 7 months later, Rockford Products Company filed a Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceeding in the United States Bankruptcy Court for the Northern District of Illinois Western Division. Through those bankruptcy proceedings, what happened was eventually in November of 2007, Rockford Products Corporation entered into an asset purchase agreement with the appellee, Rockford Acquisitions, LLC. Through that transaction or that asset purchase agreement, virtually all of the assets of Rockford Products Corporation were sold to Rockford Acquisitions, and the lease in question for this building was assumed through that process and assigned to Rockford Acquisitions. The orders were entered by the bankruptcy court on November 15, 2007, approving the sales transaction and approving the assignment and assumption of the lease. The lease was assumed by the debtor, Rockford Products Corporation, under 365, and then sold and assigned to Rockford Acquisitions.
Why did the lower courts not have jurisdiction to interpret and enforce the sale order? And I mean, isn't that what they both believe they were doing here in their respective rulings?
Well, the bankruptcy court did that. The bankruptcy court said, yes, I have jurisdiction to enforce to interpret my orders and enforce them. And then the bankruptcy court went on further in stating, my order doesn't impact this matter. This is a state law, common law claim for a specific performance involving a lease between parties that are not parties to the bankruptcy proceeding. It doesn't involve property of the estate. The lease left the bankruptcy estate upon the assignment and assumption to Rockford Acquisitions, and was no longer property of the state. Harrison Kishwaukee didn't involve claims against the bankruptcy estate. Harrison Kishwaukee wasn't asserting a claim against the bankruptcy estate. Didn't involve the trustee.
You know, my other question is, how is the remand for determination of which leaks in the roof began? How is that a ministerial task so that we can treat the district court's order as final? Because that doesn't seem to me to be sort of a rote, mechanical task to determine when it began. I mean, I think it takes a lot
of... To be honest with you, Your Honor, I'm not even sure...
Oh, always be honest with us, please.
I'm not even sure it's a possible task.
Yeah, but so how is it ministerial?
Well, someone's going to come in and say that leak was pre-assumption, that leak was post-assumption, this leak was later, that leak was there, and oh, by the way, the $615,000 we already spent on it, repairing the roof, did this, but yet didn't do that. I mean, but it is an act of fact-finding as to when a leak first occurred. Was it pre-petition or pre-assumption or post-assumption? And many times in a bankruptcy setting, which involves a settlement or resolution of a myriad of issues, the Seventh Circuit and other courts have held that as a court determines each issue, there are many finite issues which are determined within a bankruptcy process which become final and appealable. And in this instance, you had a finite issue that was finally resolved by the district court in its order. And that finite decision, resolution, was Harrison Kishwaukee couldn't pursue Rockford Acquisition for any pre-assumption leaks, but was free to pursue Harrison Kishwaukee Rockford Acquisition, I'm sorry, for any post-assumption leases.
That's you.
Yes, I know. We were pursuing Rockford Acquisition. But that was a finite decision that was reached by...
What this has to do with appellate jurisdiction. I thought your argument for appellate jurisdiction was that the district court had enjoined state proceedings.
Right. I was answering the judge's question, but certainly we suggested that appellate court jurisdiction rests also on the basis.
I didn't see how what you were saying had any bearing at all on appellate jurisdiction.
Well, the court does have appellate jurisdiction because we believe that the order was entered by the district court, which prohibits Harrison Kishwaukee from doing a certain acts, that being pursuing Rockford Acquisitions for the pre-assumption leaks, is a form of injunction in that it specifically prohibits and precludes our client from doing anything. It's an order.
Where can we find this injunction?
Within the terms of the district court's order when it says...
No, sorry. Rule 65 says that every injunction must be stated in a separate document and not by reference to the content of an opinion. So the contents of an opinion never create an injunction. Only a separate document can create an injunction. Was there some separate document that had any order that said you can't pursue the state litigation?
No, Your Honor, there is no separate document.
And at least some of what I read in the brief suggested that it was the state court on its own that decided to sit tight until the federal proceedings were over. Is that a fair statement of what's happened?
The state court did say because of issues that were raised by Rockford Acquisition in response to Harrison Kishwaukee's motion for summary judgment in the state court proceedings, raised issues of, well, this violates the terms of the asset purchase order.
I asked a focused question. Is the state court sitting tight on its own, or because it believes it's been ordered by a federal court not to do anything?
The district court provided that. Rockford.
All right. Let me break this down into still more basic components. Is the state court processing this case?
No, Your Honor. It's not moving forward.
What has the state judge said about why the state is not processing this case?
The state court allowed Rockford Acquisitions to take their issues to the bankruptcy court relative.
Look,
it's waiting for the federal court to be determined.
Please listen. What did the state judge say? Be concrete. Is there some order the state judge entered? If so, where can we find it?
There is a memorandum decision order that is part of the record in this case.
All right. And what does it say?
That says it will grant Rockford Acquisitions 30 days to bring the matter before the bankruptcy court as to the issues relative to the interpretation of its orders. And says
so it doesn't say anything about when it's going to proceed.
It said if it were to rule, it would do that. It has said since then that it is waiting for the proceedings from federal court. It is not in a written order, Your Honor. It's what happens on the status calls.
Then presumably that can be transcribed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Has it been transcribed?
No, Your Honor.
Would you get it transcribed and give it to us so we can find out what's going on?
I mean, the claim for appellate jurisdiction seems, at least to me,
to depend on a contention that the state judge has been stopped in his tracks by a federal injunction. And that gives me two problems. One, where's the injunction? And two, is that how the state judge understands the state of things? If the state judge is not proceeding on his own volition, then we don't have an injunction problem.
You know, I answered your first question. I mean, I agree with you. There is no separate order. As to the second question, we can't go back to state court because of the district court order seeking to enforce.
There is no district court order. You've just told me.
There's no separate order entered under Rule 65 that says
then there's
this
no
is
injunction.
Well, there is.
We have said that if all that's going on is a district judge says something but doesn't enter anything that looks like a Rule 65 order, then there's no injunction, no possibility of contempt, nothing happens. If a district judge enters something that doesn't comply with Rule 65, then we probably have an injunction, but it's reversible for noncompliance with Rule 65. And what you've told me is there's no order, so it's on the side of our cases that says nothing has happened. You can't appeal nothing. You can't appeal something a judge says. You can only appeal from judgments.
Well, then I misspoke, Your Honor, on it. There is the district court order that precludes us from going back to state court. If we went back to state court,
is that order?
That's in the district court's memorandum opinion and
no
decision.
The contents of an opinion explain the order the court enters. The order is distinct from the opinion. If you don't have an order, you don't have an injunction. And so far as I can tell, the only order the district judge entered sends his case back to the bankruptcy judge. It doesn't say, doesn't order the parties not to go to state court. It doesn't order the state judge not to hear the case.
Your Honor, I agree as to the actual order, what you're stating about what the order is and what it says. I view that if we went back into the state court and moved in two proceedings and asked the state court judge to issue his ruling and enforce the lease pursuant to its terms as we envision it, that we would end up back in front of the district court on a rule of show cause.
No, you would not. The only thing a district court can enforce via contempt proceedings is an injunction entered pursuant to Rule 65. And you have told me that there is none. It's not the case that there's a defective injunction. It's that there is no injunction. There is nothing enforceable. You are at no risk whatsoever. Now, it may be that the state judge just doesn't want to proceed, but that's the state judge's doing, not an injunction. That's why I've asked you to give us copies of the state judge's actual orders and any transcript of what he said about why he wasn't proceeding. There's a big difference between a state judge being enjoined by a federal judge and a state judge acting on his own volition not to proceed in order better to coordinate with pending federal litigation. It's a huge difference.
Well, we certainly never intended to lead the court to believe or argue that there was an injunction entered precluding the state court from proceeding. We viewed...
That's what your brief says is the basis of appellate jurisdiction.
Is there an injunction precluding Harris and Kishwaukee from taking certain actions on that matter? But there are the other basis for jurisdiction is it did resolve a finite, distinct issue in the bankruptcy court. That is, you know, the issue relative to the leaks and whether they were pre-assumption or post-assumption leaks. And that issue was determined, saying the court has said that under the terms of the asset purchase agreement or order, the pre-assumption leaks are not the responsibility of Rockford Acquisition, and the post-assumption leaks are the responsibility of Rockford Acquisitions, and that issue is finite, and that issue has been determined by the court. And with all due respect, I see that my light has been out for
a while. But nothing as what you described as injunction, and as Judge Easterbrook point out, may or may not be that dealt with that issue. the post, the repair on the roof?
I'm sorry, Aaron? No, I mean, nothing that we've talked about relative to the injunction dealt with the actual issue of the repair on the roof and the obligations under lease and the implications relative to what is and is not a cure claim and whether there's any default or no default on the lease because of, you know, there has, obviously I agree with the panel that there has to be some basis of jurisdiction that this court has before it will reach those issues. By reserving my remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Lester. Ms. Carlton.
Thank you. I'm here for Appellee Rockford Acquisition, LLC, but I'd like to refer to it as buyer, and I'd like to refer to Appellant Harrison Kishwaukee as landlord, just make it easier.
As you did in your brief.
Yes, and I find it hard to say Harrison Kishwaukee. One of the issues that came up in Mr. Lester's argument was whether the district court was entering an injunction. And what happened here is the bankruptcy court entered an injunction in November of 07 in its sale order. Both paragraphs 22 and 33 expressly bar and enjoin a list of parties, which would include the landlord here, from bringing any cause of action against the buyer based on a claim which existed before the sale. The district court didn't enter an injunction, and if you look at his order, which is very short, it's remanded to the bankruptcy court for a determination of which defects appellee is seeking to enforce existed pre-assumption and to enter an order enforcing the sale order. So the district court isn't issuing an injunction. It's enforcing the bankruptcy court's injunction.
And do you agree with Mr. Lester that there's no separate order that might be called an injunction?
Correct. So basically,
separate from the bankruptcy.
Yeah, I the district
separate
court.
Separate from the order in the bankruptcy, the old order in the bankruptcy proceeding. But there's no new order by the district judge that looks like an injunction.
That's correct. And basically what you have here, my client bought a financially troubled company operating an 80-year-old building that had repair issues out of bankruptcy. The client relied on what the sale order said, which gave it protections many different ways, not just against defaults, but against claims, et cetera, barring any liability to landlord or others for conditions which existed before the closing of the sale. Now, according to the landlord, debtor had the obligation before the closing to repair the roof, and buyer has the same obligation post-closing to repair the same leaks. The landlord's position has been that the sale order protections are meaningless because replacing the roof is a continuing obligation.
But why is the dispute over the leaking roof not governed by the terms of the asset purchase agreement?
It is governed by the terms of the asset purchase agreement, which says that the buyer will have absolutely no obligation for an excluded liability.
But if the I might very well, you know, be wrong, but as I read Section 4.7, the debtor as the seller was representing that it was not in breach of any of the obligations under the lease, including the obligation to keep the roof in good repair. And if that representation was false, then under Section 9.3, Rockford had 6 months to seek indemnification. And once that period was over, once that six-month period was over, doesn't Rockford have or bear sole responsibility for the leaking roof?
No, Your Honor. First, this argument was waived because it wasn't raised below, and it's not the landlord's issue, it's the trustee's issue, but the claim's not time-barred. The asset purchase agreement identified three types of claims, and there were claims arising from an inaccuracy of representations and warranties or the failure to perform or any excluded liability. The representation and warranties survived for only 6 months after the closing.
But
there's nothing comparable. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No,
I
sorry.
Shouldn't have interrupted.
No,
there's nothing
ahead.
Comparable to assert for losses on excluded liabilities. And the excluded liabilities include any claim that could have been asserted before the sale based on the assets that the buyer is acquiring, and one of those assets was this lease.
Yeah, but if our job is to interpret the sale order which approved the asset purchase agreement, do we have to blind ourselves to a provision that would clearly resolve the merits of the appeal? I mean, in other words, can we overlook the waiver?
I don't know as much.
There's waiver.
I'm sorry. I don't know as much about appellate jurisdiction as you do, obviously, but I think actually you can if it's not raised. But the real key is the agreement had a 6-month limitation, looking at 9.3, only for representations and warranties. There is no limitation for an assumed liability, and that makes sense because somebody might come along and sue or make a claim on an assumed liability long after 6 months has passed. And there's a limitation on dollar amount for certain claims, but there's not for a time to assert an excluded liability. So I assume it would be your statute of limitations for contract claims or for the court to enforce its own order. And I don't know that there's a time limit on that because in the Travelers Insurance case, it was close to 20 years after the John Mansfield order barring claims against the insurers who were putting up the fund for the asbestos claimants, and many more years after that 1986 order.
But why did you let all those years go by spending, you know, over $600,000 on the roof, like it was the Taj Mahal, before you all began to claim that some or all of the leaks preceded, you know, this your assumption?
Well, buyer can't force the landlord to fix the roof. Buyer's in there operating, and it fixed the roof enough for its own needs. It's not in the record, but it's my understanding this is a pretty big premises, and my client's only using maybe 25%. So it didn't need to fix the entire roof, but just the portion it was using.
Are they leasing the entire building?
Yes. And I think it was built in 1937. I believe that's in the record. And so my position is this court does not have jurisdiction because the order appealed from was not a final order, and the injunction exception does not apply.
So what do you think we ought to do with you?
I think you should dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction, which I guess would then mean the remand from the district court to the bankruptcy court would become effective.
Do we have a statute of limitations problem here?
I don't believe so, because all this was arose, I think, in 2011, but I'm not positive. But you have both. It's in the record, but I don't remember the exact dates. But you have what they sued in state court, and you have us going back into the bankruptcy court, enforce your order. And the bankruptcy court, I believe, under the Travelers Insurance opinion, doesn't have a statute of limitations on enforcing its own order. It gets to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue isn't, is somebody seeking money from the estate?
But we've got a bankruptcy court order. We've got that.
Yes.
What we don't have is a judgment from the district court. So where are we going?
What you have is the decision on appeal and an order of remand. So if this appeal were dismissed, then go back to the district court, which has already said I'm remanding it to the bankruptcy court, and then we'd be in the bankruptcy court. And, in fact, Judge Barbosa has retired, and it's now a newer appointed judge in the bankruptcy
court. We have to give direction. Did the bankruptcy court make some reference to the state going back to the state courts?
I don't remember exactly. It was a very, very brief. The order itself is a one-liner E entry, and there was a few statements on the record. I think my memory is that certainly is the implication of what the judge was saying, but I don't know if he said it expressly.
So if we reverse, gave direction to the district court to remand, but with directions to go back to state court?
No, I'm saying dismiss the appeal to the Seventh Circuit, leaving the district court opinion in force and effect, and the district court opinion and order. And that opinion and order remands to the bankruptcy court with instructions to make certain factual findings and to enter an order that only post-closing roof problems can be litigated in state court.
So it wouldn't have any... Well, it would be litigated in state court then.
Yes, to the extent the bankruptcy judge finds that there are post-closing roof problems.
You wouldn't presume that, though. We wouldn't direct that. They'd have to make those findings.
That's correct. And, again, didn't raise below that it's factually impossible to figure out when a leak began, but I think we've got people who've worked for many, many years in that plant and go along, yep, it was leaking here a long time ago. I have other things to say, but I guess I won't take all my time, but I'll simply ask that the appeal to this court be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction and let this go back to the district court for the district court's order to stand. And thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any more questions?
Thank you, counsel.
Okay.
Anything further, Mr. Lester?
Get a query, if I may, Your Honor.
Your Honor, an additional basis, and I'm not going to go back in the Rule 65 and injunction issue. I think we've talked about that. But as an additional basis for possible jurisdiction of this court is under a writ of mandamus, and while not specifically asked for, the courts certainly have the ability to issue an order to confine a lower court to the jurisdiction which it has. And this matter, which is a pure state law claim against between the two parties and doesn't involve any property of the estate, certainly doesn't give rise to bankruptcy court jurisdiction to hear and determine this matter, which is effectively what the bankruptcy court found in its order, saying I have a jurisdiction to enforce my order. This is a state law claim. This doesn't involve property of the estate or issues of the estate. Therefore, I'll send it back to state court. I do notice that my time is up, so we would respectfully request that the court reverse the district court and affirm the order of the bankruptcy court. Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.